I was suddenly asked to speak. So I'll speak a little bit. Thank you so much for a wonderful class. Very inspiring. One thing that struck me, though, when Swamiji used the word poetry as somehow a way of dismissing something. It's interesting. I never quite heard that before. But poetry is what we find all of our shastras in. We find all of the information in poetry. The Bhagavata was even stated to be one professor of mine at Harvard. And this is so unlikely by an academic to say such a thing. He is known to know 14 languages and poetry in all of them. Middle Eastern languages, South Asian languages. His name was Daniel Ingalls. And he said, when reading the Dashama Skanda of the Bhagavata, he said, this is the most enchanting poem ever written. Now that is something. Academics never speak in absolute terms. They never do. They're in the relative world, so they don't have absolutes. But here, he lost himself in the beauty, an extraordinary poetic achievement of the Bhagavata. And so that is one of the reasons why I did my dissertation on the Bhagavata. But here in this verse, and I lost it. Let's see, where is it? Just speaking of Sanskrit and speaking of poetry, here Prabhupada is explaining that the acharyas take some of these words. I keep losing my feedback. Would you hold it for me? Yeah. They take some of these words to mean very opposing meanings, take very opposite meanings. And one of the reasons for this is that Sanskrit, one time I was corrected in my pronunciation of the word Sanskrit. I was speaking at the Smithsonian, and one Indian gentleman, very nice gentleman, said, I liked your lecture very much, but I must correct you. You say Sanskrit, but it is Sanskritam. I said, yes. I said, but the word has become anglicized, and if I say Sanskritam in America, no one will understand. So I have to say Sanskrit. And the irony of that is that there is no ah pronunciation anywhere in Sanskrit. So that's part of the irony of the word Sanskrit. But as I was explaining, we had a nice time in the Brahmacharya Ashram yesterday. We were talking about the nature of Sanskrit. And Sanskrit is a language in which its words take in much more of the world, much more of reality than English words do. And I compared it to the difference between a Western violin. All of you have seen Western violin, right? You put on the shoulder, right, the fingerboard, and there are four strings. They're just four strings. But an Indian violin, namely the sarangi, has three strings that are bowed, right, which are held in the lap, right? But behind the three strings are 38 sympathetic strings, tarabs. So when you strike a note on one of the strings, the sympathetic strings are set off. And Sanskrit words are just like that. They resonate an amazing range of meanings. They're so rich, so deep, that it's possible for the acharyas to take hatva, which is a continuative, as gyatva, a word that means having killed, to mean having known. Now, I'm not going to give you a Sanskrit lesson today, so don't worry. But this speaks to the idea that Sanskrit words are so rich. And to do these Vaishnava Shastras justice, they must be translated by persons who have a deep sense of not just the language, but what the message is and the poetry is, what the poetry is saying. So similarly, I'll just wind up with a thought about the Bhagavad Gita. When I Prabhupada said there could be many Bhagavad Gitas. So I translated the Bhagavad Gita in an effort to bridge people to Prabhupada's Gita in the academic setting, but also the devotee setting. It was only when I translated the Bhagavad Gita for publication that I made a discovery that I had never known in reading the Bhagavad Gita in Sanskrit and English for decades. And that is what was meant by Sanjaya when he characterized the whole teaching of the Gita as Gulyam Param Yogam, the supreme secret of yoga. I thought, is this just poetry, the way Swamiji was using the word, or was it poetry? And I looked into this, and I noticed that Krishna in the 4th chapter, in the 9th chapter, in the 10th chapter, 11th chapter, and 15th chapter subtly weaves a thread that indicates a secret teaching. As Swamiji said, the whole point of the Gita is to learn how to act selflessly in serving Krishna. But why do we do this? I discovered the precondition for such acting in this secret. And what I discovered is that the 18th chapter of the Gita consists of the great secret, the greatest secret, and the greatest secret of all. The first 50, I go into this in my translation, but the first 50 verses are the great secret. And this has to do with the outer world of dharma, acting in this way, acting according to the heart in the world, acting according to your calling. The greater secret, verses 51 through 63, the inner world of Brahman and Purusha, or Paramatman, to know the true self, to know reality. And then the greatest secret of all, which is not just a superlative, but a super superlative. Not just the greatest secret, but the greatest secret of all greatest secrets. Sarva guyatamam bhuya shrinu me paramang vachaha ishto sime dritam itti tato vachyami teyatam. 64 through 66. 66, as we all know, is known as the Charma Shloka. But 64 says something, it does something in the verse. There is no verse that is more emphatic, more insistent, more dramatic than any other verse in the Gita I've analyzed. You know, in Sanskrit, if you want to say something, you know, we don't have uppercase letters, boldface, double strike, italics, smiley faces. No, we don't have that. We don't have that. If it is to be said, it has to be stated linguistically. And what is Krishna saying there? The greatest secret of all, sarva guyatamam bhuya. Hear it again. I've been kind of indicating it throughout the Gita, but now I will boldly give it to you. Finally, sarva guyatamam bhuya. And if that weren't enough, shrinume, hear it again, paramang vachaha, my greatest message, my supreme message, paramang vachaha. Could this be more emphatic? And the third line is his greatest message. And it's so simple, but so powerful. And he puts it in an itti clause, which are quotation marks. And what is that? Ishto si me dritam. You are so much loved by me. It's simple. It's an unconditional statement of love from an unconditioned being. We may have conditions with our loves, but Krishna does not. And he, so many times throughout the Gita, talks about coming to him. Souls coming to him. And he does this in the next verse. This is the very essence of the Gita and the very basis on which we would ever act or ever attain knowledge or devote our hearts. It is all because Krishna desires us. The word ishta means love, but it means the love of desire. So Krishna so intensely desires us. But he's very quiet about it, so quiet that many people don't even are able to observe this in the Gita itself, including myself. After 40 years of reading the Gita, I only discover it when I translate it. So, I share this with you simply to help you understand in this verse how the acharyas can see deeper things in the Sanskrit and mine the jewels of the Sanskrit and the poetry, if I may say. That's all I have to say. Thank you.